Hi, and thanks for downloading From the Tops podcast. I'm pianist Orly Shaham, and I had the honor of guest hosting this podcast. The whole experience was such fun for me, meeting the amazingly talented kids, going up to the gorgeous town of Brunswick, Maine to record. The weather was perfect and the leaves were gorgeous, and making beautiful music. I was so impressed with how dedicated these kids were and how ready they were to rethink their music and constantly improve it. I hope you enjoy all of it.
From NPR.
It's From the Top.
Celebrating the power of music.
In the hands of America's kids.
Here's our host, concert pianist Orly Shaham.
Welcome. What a pleasure to be guest hosting From the Top. I've been listening to this show for years, and I've admired the enthusiasm and the incredible spirit of the kids on it. And getting to know a whole crew of From the Top performers this week, they've really shown me their dedication, their intelligence, their love of music. I want to thank Bowdoin College for bringing us up here to this beautiful picture postcard New England campus in Brunswick, Maine. It has been gorgeous sunshiny weather, and it's so beautiful outside this room that we're sometimes a little sad to come into it. But this room makes us smile. This is an unusual concert hall. We're here in Studzinski Hall, which is the only concert hall I know of that used to be a swimming pool. That just means that today's show is going to go swimmingly. So let's get started with our first performer. Please welcome 16-year-old cellist from Flushing, New York, Jiaxun Caroline Yao. So Caroline, will you share what we are playing together?
We will be playing the first movement of the Debussy Cello Sonata.
And I guess since I start this one, when you're ready, I'll take it from the top.
Thank you.
Jiaxun Caroline Yao, 16, from Flushing, New York, played the opening movement of Claude Debussy's Sonata for Cello and Piano. Jiaxun is a Jack Kent Cook young artist. I'm pianist Orly Shaham, and I was delighted to collaborate with her just now. I have to say, Caroline, your playing is so delicious.
Thank you.
I love the way you have an arc to that movement, and you really breathe with it. Mm-hmm. How did you discover this piece?
It was actually, I heard a YouTube video of this piece played by Lynn Harrell, and I thought it was really, really moving, so I decided to learn this.
Yeah, I know that performance. It's an incredible performance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's have a little bit of a listen to this YouTube video of Lynn Harrell playing this Debussy sonata. That's the third movement of mm-hmm. the Debussy sonata you and I just played.
Yeah.
What is it that you love about his playing?
What just played was actually my favorite part out of the whole piece.
Mm.
And it's just really, it has a lot of color. You know, Debussy was a really, really detailed composer.
Yes.
So he includes a lot of markings. And the passage we just played just now was, you can hear a lot of like color changes and characters, and it's just really, really beautiful.
It's true, you know, as interpreters, we try so hard to follow every little detail that the mm-hmm. composer put into
yeah.
the music, but at the same time breathe life into it, you know,
yeah,
of our
yeah, yeah.
own. This made me think a little bit about a cellist that I really love, and I would like to get your reaction.
Mm-hmm.
This is Pablo Casals playing a little bit of the Bourée from Bach's Fourth Cello Suite. What do you think of that, Caroline?
It was really nice playing. Yeah, it is. Definitely.
Not bad, right? He could have had a career in music, I think.
I know, right? Yeah. And I really love the character he brought. And it's just really light and peaceful. Yeah.
It's so great that we have access to all these recordings. We can be inspired by famous artists.
Yeah.
But I know the most important relationship in a young musician's life mm-hmm. is the relationship between you and your teacher. Can you tell us who you're studying with at the moment?
I'm studying with Mr. Richard Aaron and Mrs. Xuan Lin. Yeah.
Yes. Well, please send my regards to them when you see them again.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful teachers and incredible musicians. I'm sure you've been learning tons from them, but you're also mm-hmm. at that age where it's time to develop a little bit of independence from your teachers. Have you had some experiences with that recently?
It was when, like, last year I had my recital, mm-hmm. and I was playing the Brahms E minor sonata.
Oh, one of my favorite
pieces. Yeah, I know, right? And I haven't learned the first movement from my teacher, so I was, like, kind of self-taught for the first movement. It was only before 1 week before my recital, and I started learning that, and it was really, really challenging, but I tried my best to like bring all things I found in the music and also mm-hmm. from the recordings I can bring to the musical expression.
And how did your teacher feel about the performance?
Yeah. She was really, really amazed. She went like, "Caroline, oh my gosh, I can't believe you played this well and haven't taken any lessons." Yeah, it's like,
oh, that's a relief, right?
Yeah.
Well, uh-huh. that's great. You know, that feeling as an artist of beginning to trust the courage of your convictions,
mm-hmm.
But always having a lovely second pair of ears that you can trust as well.
Yeah.
This is a balance that will guide you through the rest of your career.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly you're already doing a great job with it. I'm thrilled to have gotten a chance to play with you. Thank you so much to Jiaxun Caroline Yao, 16, from Flushing, New York. And now, a very young guitar duo from Palo Alto, California. We have 10-year-old Elle Davison at the mic over here. Elle, can you introduce whom you're playing with, please?
Well, this is my brother, Jack Davison.
And is Jack older or younger than you?
He is 3 years older than me.
Can you tell us what the two of you will be performing together?
We will be performing Django Duo by Paolo Bellinati.
Thank you.
Django by Paolo Bellinati, played by the brother and sister duo of Jack and Elle Davison from Palo Alto, California. I love watching you guys play. I love the physicality of it, the way that you make eye contact sometimes with each other's faces, sometimes with each other's hands. And I feel a little sorry for our listeners at home that they weren't here to see this, but we do have a video for them on the website they can go and watch. You also made a video of this earlier, and it went viral. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Elle?
So for us, that was a completely new experience, and it happened, we were performing at the Guitar Foundation of America for a guest artist, and he asked for a short clip of our piece, which was Django. And we were young at the time. And
yes, you've aged a lot since.
Yes. Very immature. And so we said, sure, thinking two people would see it, the guest artist and his mother. But taken completely by surprise, it went viral. And suddenly, we had posted a few YouTube videos before, and suddenly those videos were getting hits. I mean, videos of me playing in my pajamas. And
yeah, I get the feeling you've learned a lesson that many adults still haven't learned, which is be careful what you post on the internet.
Yeah. Finally, my mother, with my dad's help, finally took those off public mode and put them private.
Yes, IT mom and IT dad make a good team. I am a parent of young musicians myself, roughly your ages. And Jack, I'm always talking with other parents about how to get kids motivated for practicing. Do you have any great insight of what works for you?
So again, when we were a lot smaller, I'm saying I was 5 and Elle hadn't even started guitar. I was just starting out, and because 5-year-olds are sometimes not as focused as they should be.
I find that 40-some-odd-year-olds have the same problems.
So I was motivated by my teacher's little prize bucket, which contained silly bands and other little gimmicks that were appealing to me at the time. And it was funny because I progressed quickly, and I got a prize for every piece that I passed. So for a while, I was passing a piece per week, and my lessons were once a week, so that meant dipping my hand into the prize bucket every week. Yeah. And after a while, my mom got guilty because I was consuming Teacher Chris's whole bucket. So she started secretly funding the little treats and prizes.
But what you are telling me is that bribery works, yes? Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
Our incredible guitar teacher, he couldn't go too low. Bribery are just fine. It's a great strategy for young kids.
Do you have a favorite prize?
Well, when I was younger, I was really into silly bands, and at one point, my guitar teacher got Tweety Bird pink glittery silly bands, which I loved so much.
I can only imagine how many pieces you were learning per week then. What is it like for the two of you? You may know I have a famous brother who is a violinist, and we play together a lot. What is it like for the two of you to play together?
Well, we do so many activities together. I admit, we do argue most of the time.
A ton.
Sometimes, kind of. Maybe more than we'd like to admit, but we do so many activities together, it just felt natural to also be playing guitar together.
There's a friction, right, of being brother and sister and being together 100% of the time.
Sure.
But there's also a certain advantage to knowing each other so well that to a certain level you can anticipate what the other one is going to do. So it's like a next level connection.
I can tell you after a lifetime that when Gil and I play together, there is no other person who can read my mind in quite that same way. So this will serve you for a long time to come. It seems that despite the friction, you have a pretty good rapport going with each other, and it's lovely to watch. The Davison guitar duo, Jack Davison, 13, and his sister Elle, 10, from Palo Alto, California.
The Davisons are such fun to watch, and we have video of them at FromTheTop.org. Over the last 13 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded over $2.5 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to FromTheTop.org to learn more. Orly,
Thank you, Joanne. This week has shown us that Maine is more than just another pretty state. You also cultivate the musicians here really beautifully. And up next is our first Mainer of the day. He's a 17-year-old bassoonist from Shapley, and his name is Aaron Brown. He'll play the first movement of the Sonata for Bassoon and Piano by William Hurlstone, and I have the pleasure of joining him at the piano.
Thank you.
Aaron Brown, 17, from Shapley, Maine, played the vivace from the sonata for bassoon and piano by William Hurlstone. Aaron is one of our Jack Kent Cook young artists. Aaron, I have to say, what I've enjoyed so much about working with you is your ability to really express character through the music. You seem to really embody different people as you play it. Is that something you feel?
Yeah, I definitely feel like the different character changes in what emotion I'm trying to put into the music.
Well, it absolutely shows. Now, I want to ask you about the town of Shapley, because I had not heard of it before. I see it's an in-Maine joke, yes?
The town of Shapley is a very small town. There's a couple thousand people at most, and it's a lot of locals. They grow up there, and they live their whole lives in Shapley. And
in such a small community, how did you become such a master of the bassoon?
I started in middle school. Mm-hmm. I just, they needed a bassoon player in my 7th and 8th grade band, and
that's often how bassoonists start.
And I was selected to, and then I started it, played for a couple months, and then I was recommended to my current bassoon teacher, Ren Saunders, and then I've been studying with her ever since.
It's so great that they have such support for a musician like you in this place, and I know that music isn't the only thing you take very seriously. You and I have another interest in common. I was a modern European history major in college, and you're a history fan as well?
Yes.
What kind of history? Tell me.
The history that I like is more of the people's story, not just the leaders, the nobles, the aristocracy. It's more of the modern, the common people, mm-hmm. and what they experienced and how they lived their lives.
So you like to share that bit of humanity. I mm-hmm. think maybe that ties a little bit back into what we were talking about with character in the music. There's something else that you and I have in common, which I don't know if you knew this before, but I am a parent of twins, and you are a twin.
Yes.
I have fraternal boys, and they are so different from one another. Some of it clearly genetically influenced, and some of it clearly influenced by wanting to be different. Mm-hmm. How are you, and, tell us about your twin.
So I have a fraternal twin sister.
There's a difference there already.
We couldn't really be more opposite. Mm. I'm very artsy, like bassoon. She is more of a hands-on person. She likes horticulture, gardening, and more of the farming side of stuff.
Beautiful. Well, actually, in a certain way, you're both working with your hands to make something beautiful. Mm. Maybe there's more similarity than you might be able to see at this point in your life.
Yeah.
Aaron Brown, 17, from Shapley, Maine. Thank you.
Thank you.
From the Top thanks the excellent youth orchestra programs in Maine for supporting the local Maine performers on this program, including the Portland Youth Wind Ensemble, the Portland Youth Symphony Orchestra, and the Bangor Symphony Youth Orchestra.
Support for NPR comes from this station. And from the Howard and Geraldine Pollinger Family Foundation, committed to nurturing the development of talented emerging artists and sharing the joy that the performing arts bring to life. From the Volgenau Foundation, supporting programs that conserve natural resources, educate children, and promote classical music. From the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, providing scholarships to high-achieving students with financial need. And from Americans for the Arts.
Thank you.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. This week, we're coming to you from Studzinski Hall on the campus of Bowdoin College in Brunswick, Maine. Coming up, a 17-year-old violinist from here in Maine plays Jules Massenet's beloved Meditation from Thais. Today's show from Brunswick, Maine is made possible with support from the Onion Foundation, the Donald M. Zuckert Fund, and Maine Public Radio. Here again is our guest host, concert pianist Orly Shaham.
Thank you, Joanne. Joining us now is a 17-year-old pianist studying at the Curtis Institute in Philadelphia. Please welcome Avery Galliano. Avery, please tell us what you're going to play.
I will be playing the first and third movements from Brahms's Klavierstücke, Opus 118.
Okay, when you're ready, please take it from the top.
Thank you.
two of the six pieces for piano, Opus 118 by Johannes Brahms, played by 17-year-old Avery Galliano. Avery is studying at the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia. Avery, I have to tell you, your playing is so beautiful. It's so thoughtful. There's so many layers to everything that you're doing, and we can really hear how deeply worked out the pieces are.
Thank you so much.
I know these pieces really well. I recorded them just a few years ago, and I loved spending time just living inside Brahms's brain for a few years and really getting to know the ins and outs of everything in them. But they are so difficult. What do you find most challenging with these pieces?
Well, Brahms is such an orchestral composer. So as a pianist, the one of the great challenges is capturing all the different voicing that he incorporates into his music. So it's really about understanding the different melodies that are going on and being able to bring out what is most important to me or to you as a performer.
I think the way that you said it, you know, Brahms is an orchestral composer, and in his hands, the piano is not one instrument, but it's at minimum 10 instruments, and you are the conductor of your 10 fingers, right? And the way that a conductor is listening to the whole orchestra and trying to balance, maybe saying a little more bassoon there or less flute there, you have to do the same thing with your fingers, and often the writing is thick enough that there's, you know, eight voices going on at the same time. So that's sort of what you mean, I think, by voicing. But let's delve a little deeply. Let's do a little piano nerd talk, and talk about voicing in these pieces, because I think it's kind of an endless source of magic and frustration.
Definitely.
Let's take this little passage from the first of these pieces, the intermezzo, and maybe you can play for our listeners what it sounds like, just the way you played it just now, from there to there. Yeah, so that, it has a great sweep to it, right? There's a lot of passion involved. There's a lot of notes, too. And you have some choices to make, right? There's like a hierarchy that you need to bring out. Let's illustrate this really clearly. This is one of those spots where I think Brahms is trying to make it foolproof for us as pianists. He secretly puts double stems on notes, meaning that the little note stem goes both up and down to kind of let you know that it belongs in two voices.
Right.
And so he puts this little double stemming in this one. Let me just play. There's a secret little line that goes like this in what Avery just played. This rising chromatic line, which I think is maybe the source of this passion.
Of the energy that takes you along.
Absolutely. Can you put that into context? Play all the notes, but really put this into strong relief so we can hear just that chromatic scale rising out of it. That's very powerful when you do it that way. How does it feel to bring that voice out quite so much?
It feels a little weird because we naturally want to voice to the top. And when I play through this, I think the most important thing for me is to be aware of it. So we don't necessarily play it the loudest, but if we hear it, then hopefully everybody else will hear that underlying.
And I think it's okay for pianists to assume that people's ears, whether consciously or not, can pick up on two different things. So why don't you play it for us now, all the way into the big sweep with that chromatic line rising and everything else. It's amazing how when you do both, suddenly the energy level just doubles. Yeah, thank you for playing our game of voicing.
Now everybody knows the secret.
I don't think Brahms would have minded. You know, Brahms was, he very much loved
writing for people. He was not high-minded in that way. In fact, he had great success as a writer of very popular waltzes, which were published and made him a pretty penny. He wrote a lot of pop tunes, and I understand this is something he has in common with you.
Yes. So there's a story behind that. So when I was in middle school, one day I found out that a classmate from Sunday school had committed suicide. And for me, that was very shocking, you know, being 12 or 13 years old. So I went home that day, and for some reason, I was prompted to write a song about it. And ever since then, I have written songs to express my feelings and my emotions, and I found it a really great tool. You know, as classical musicians, we express the composer's emotions and our emotions through the music. And as a songwriter, you have that additional tool of the actual lyrics and expressing our thoughts through words.
So. Yeah, and Brahms wrote quite a lot of Lieder, even though he didn't write the words. He took ones that suited what he did.
Yeah.
So that's something that you very much share with him, mm-hmm. that ability to put passion and emotion in music in a way that is accessible to everyone. What would your ideal career be?
Well, as naturally as a concert pianist, I'd love to be able to tour with an orchestra or a piano trio. That's an interest of mine. But one of my wilder dreams is to record an album of my music. And hopefully, you know, it would be pretty fantastic if it was hit the billboards or, you know, millions of people were listening to my song.
Well, I can't wait for that to come out.
Well, I hope so one day.
Avery, I look forward to having you back in our big finale where you and I get to sit at the piano and play four hands together.
Yeah.
Thank you very much to 17-year-old Avery Galliano.
Podcasts of From the Top, featuring bonus content not heard on the radio broadcast, are available every week at fromthetop.org.
Next up, that violinist Joanne mentioned earlier. Please welcome another Mainer from Blue Hill, 17-year-old violinist Brandon Aponte. Brandon, please tell everyone what you and I will be playing.
Tonight, we shall perform Meditation from Thais by Jules Massenet. Thank you.
Massenet's famous meditation from the opera Thais, performed by Brandon Aponte, 17, from Blue Hill, Maine. Brandon, I really love how you allow that piece to breathe. It's a very mature approach to this piece.
Thank you very much.
Have you been playing it for a long time?
Yes, I have. In fact, I've been playing it for over 4 years now, and I played it freshman year in the competition, and it's great to see how much I've developed as a musician since then, and it's been an honor to play it with you tonight.
Oh, it's been my pleasure to play with you. I've really enjoyed every moment of music making and how you're able to shape things differently every time.
Yeah.
I know you spent a lot of your summer playing with the National Youth Orchestra of the USA. Both my brother, Gil, and my husband, David, have spent summers with them, and they both say that the interaction between the professionals and the students is really something amazing.
This summer, it was just a great opportunity to play with a bunch of young, awesome musicians from across the country, and it was just a great experience.
Now, we're going to listen to a little piece of music.
Yeah.
We're going to try to summon up a memory for you in a kind of Proustian Madeleine way. So let's listen to that music. This is one of the warmest, most loving openings. Can you tell us what this is?
Yeah, so this is Sibelius Symphony No. 2 in D major, the first movement in the very first few bars.
What is it about this that's so special for you?
Well, I had been waiting, honestly, for a year, just anticipating playing with this orchestra and getting to sit down with them finally, that first rehearsal, and just the opportunity to play these first few notes. It just really, it was a beautiful moment for me.
So you worked with maestro Michael Tilson-Thomas on that tour, and you got a little bit of a reputation, not just as a great violinist?
Yes, so it's a funny story. So the first rehearsal he came to conduct us, we were all kind of tense because we didn't know what to expect from him, but obviously it was a great experience. He was a great mentor, but I just remember, and it's a funny story, so I sat down. We were in the middle, actually, of Sibelius Symphony No. 2, and I was just overcome by, like, the beautiful music, and his conducting was just superb. But I dropped my bow and then catch it. But then, the funny story is that Michael Tilson-Thomas stops the whole entire orchestra.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and so I panic, and he looks directly at me, and he says, "Wow, that takes some skill to catch your bow like that." So I was a little relieved. Yeah. So I was relieved, but so that just made for a good memory, for sure.
Well, I've never been more grateful to have an instrument that can't be dropped.
Wish I could relate.
Thank you so much to Brandon Aponte, 17, from Blue Hill, Maine.
Thank you.
Now, I can't think of a better way to end this incredible musical hangout with all these cool teenagers. That's really the wrong word to use for this age group, shows my age. I can't think of a better way to end this incredible hangout with these beautiful musicians than for all of us to get a chance to play something together. So I asked a good friend of mine, the tremendous composer Simon Frisch, to make an arrangement of Fauré's, the final movement from his Dali suite, for precisely this ensemble. So you're about to hear the world premiere of Simon Frisch's arrangement of this, and given the instruments it takes, this may very well also be the final performance. this is a really fun way to end our show today. I want to thank all of our young performers. I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank our energetic live audience today, and especially all of the parents and teachers. I know what it takes to make this sort of thing happen. This is pianist Orly Shaham. Listen to From the Top again next week. And now, everybody, let's take this from the top. Thank you.
From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. Our home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. If you'd like to appear in our program, apply online at fromthetop.org. From the Top is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, on the web at arts.gov.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from the Rockefeller Foundation, promoting the well-being of humanity throughout the world since 1913. More about Rockefeller's work in food, health, power, jobs, and resilient cities at rockfound.org. From the Public Welfare Foundation, committed to advancing justice and opportunity for people in need. More information at publicwelfare.org. And from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation at macfound.org.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. You know, while From the Top is on NPR, it's not actually owned by NPR. It's an independent, nonprofit company based in Boston. And every year it takes a huge push for us to make the show happen financially. So I ask you to please consider donating to From the Top so that we can bring you joy, podcast after podcast. Go to fromthetop.org and click on support. And thank you.